welcome back. Welcome back. This is Charles. You're listening to the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. Coming at you with a new episode. This one's all about chasing the over-under. And the inspiration that I've found in the past and just recently with that whole idea. Boiling it down, overexposing your image, underdeveloping, and where that can lead for both landscape, but more interestingly, recently, for portrait stuff and how to do it. So yeah, that's some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. Also going to just kind of update where I'm at with my mission to continue to use up all my film and to keep rotating the neglected cameras, so we'll have an update on that too. So yeah, kind of a two-parter today, the development stuff, the over under theme, and then touching base with where I am right now as far as camera and film stuff and what I'm learning from doing this. So yeah, I'm gonna take a sip of water. I'll be right back and tune on in, guys. So I'm coming to you now from a beautiful morning in the very first week of October here in South Jersey, looking like we've gotten past all the rain, had 2 days behind us, another 2 days in front of us of just spectacular, kind of like, I don't know, Indian summer type weather, right at the shore as well. So here along the beach, we're going to be hitting 70-something degrees today and tomorrow again with really nice blue skies. The only thing that worries me is, last year, October, we had a heat wave in mid to late October, which completely screwed up the foliage. So this year, at least, we had plenty of rain. So last year was a combination of like slight drought conditions and the heat wave in late October. Really hoping that doesn't happen. Would, as much as I love this warm, cool, this warm Indian summer weather, I would love for it to get cool again. Anyhow, that's the update with the weather report. Jumping in, this whole idea of chasing the over-under. So I want to kind of break it down to how I first discovered this idea. That's going to take a little dip into the past with a gentleman named Darkroom Dave. Then I'm going to update it with something I learned just recently from having listened to the latest episode, or previously, I guess not the latest, but last week's episode of the B&H podcast. Let me start with Darkroom Dave and the whole idea of the over-under. So I've been looking at the landscape stuff or just everyday photography for black and white, of course, and home development. And I got into this whole thing in a big, big way again about 10 years ago, I believe like 2012, 2013. Reinvested in a scanner, just finally got the chemicals and the Patterson tanks. And I was really driven toward doing this by a couple of particular videos I discovered on YouTube by this really, really exceptionally cool guy named Darkroom Dave from the UK. I've mentioned him before on the podcast, but I think it's been a while. Just Google Darkroom Dave. You'll find his YouTube videos, his website. Unlike anybody else on YouTube talking about photography, this guy actually worked and spent the majority of his career at Ilford. And it gets better. He was in charge of developing one of their main modern developers. He was behind the team that did DDX. So really cool stuff. You want to research him. And he's just a really self-effacing guy who's a great teacher, has a lot of episodes that takes you through every step of the way from what he uses to develop his film, how he develops his film, how he even gets his 120 film onto the Patterson tanks, and then has quite a few good videos on, if you're lucky enough to have a darkroom, on what he truly does to get to the print. Anyhow, over under. So the deal with Darkroom Dave and the way he uses, of course, the product he spent his career working on, DDX, is that he actually recommends, not just recommends, he literally never advises in any way that you follow the dilution that Ilford does. So, you know, Ilford's basically talking about like a 1 in 4, 1+4 dilution. No, Darkroom Dave's like, nah, yeah, skip that. I like 1+6. So immediately he's cutting back on the strength of his developer. And basically, just to be really blunt about it, the way he will typically start a scene is he will point his metering device, you know, I think typically a spot meter of some sort, you know, look at using a reflective meter, and he'll try to point that at the areas in shadow. So he basically meters for the shadow, not the complete darkest part of the image, but the, you know, the darker, the he meters for the shadows, you know, nope, nothing huge there. Meters for the shadows, essentially opening up his shutter speed or what have you, opening it up possibly at least a stop, maybe even more. So he's getting more light in for each exposure. And then he develops it. He decreases the development, you know? So he basically goes over for his exposure and he goes under for his development. Now, his method of going under was to A, dilute the developer a little more. So he, again, he's a 1+6 dilution versus the 1.4. And he rolls back the time. You know, that's the typical way to roll back the development. You know, the over is to just overexpose the shot a little bit based on, in this case, where you're going to point your meter. You know, he's metering for the shadows. And the under is under development, you know, getting for the going a little bit for dilution, in this case, extra dilution, but especially a shorter time cooking up that film. And I was always intrigued by this, you know, like, because this, and oh, and it gets better too. The majority of all the stuff he's talking about is with exclusively FP4+, you know, the classic Ilford 125 speed film. So it's not just he's recommending this for any film. He does have a chart you can download from his website, but the majority of films he'll use, I think at least 80 or 90% of all his shots are with Ilford FP4, and that's the method. Go over and under. Overexpose a little bit, underdevelop. Two reasons I bring this up, and I'm going to mention this a couple of times, I think, today. I'm sorry for being repetitive, but you don't hear about this that much. You know, especially if you're getting into the Ilford scene, as it were. Really, their most popular film is not FP4, although FP4 would probably be the second most popular. No, their most popular film is their 400 speed film competing with Tri-X for a gazillion years, the classic HP5+. And you're always going to hear about, well, HP5, you know, is a little bit flat, so let's just start the conversation on the opposite, you know, and, you know, underexpose your film and overcook it, you know, essentially what's known as pushing your film. And pushing your film seems to be the lingo of a lot of enthusiasts out there. You know, it sounds cooler. You know what I mean? It sounds like you're supercharging your computer or you're turbocharging your car or something. You know, it just has a more aggressive kind of this is shooting film on steroids, man. I'm pushing my film. You know what I mean? It has a little bit more of that type A, you know, alpha male kind of thing. You know, like, I don't just shoot film at 400, man. I push mine to 1600. Oh, really? I push mine to 3200. You know, like it's a pissing contest of how far you can push your film. All the same, even though I make light of that, there is truth to it. HP5 can always benefit from a little extra contrast, whether you do it before you know you're taking a picture where you are truly setting your ISO at, say, 800, let alone 1600 or 1300. But that's not my point. You know, I guess I'm just saying that, like, the over-under, you'll tend to find that more for folks who are, you know, just quietly out there doing their thing, and they're just using this method not to impress anybody, not to shout about it, but just because it has satisfying results. You're going to get more detail in the shadows. You're going to help support that that bump, that slight contrast. But more particularly, depending on the film you're using, you can help protect those highlights, you know? And that really, in my experience, the highlight issue, which is a big, big sort of why do you even care about the over-under, the highlight issue is going to be affected so many ways. My own personal experience is the highlight issue does really depend on the film, number one. Some films just want to go blast out your highlights, but probably equally so, certain developers are going to force you to be a little careful, you know. So yeah, my experience of blown highlights, for some reason, I was on a Delta 100 kick for a while, and I had been going through several years of doing nothing but HC110, and I found myself suddenly, like, not getting the results I wanted, you know, and maybe two, it might have just been the cameras, the old vintage cameras I was using. Maybe their shutter speeds weren't so great. But yeah, I had a couple of one too many rolls where the highlights were like, what the hell happened to my highlights? so yeah, that's my tangent about that. But really, yeah, the over under is a great method, especially for just everyday shots and, you know, of course, landscape. This isn't implying that, you know, you are using some kind of reflective metering or spot metering, or even just pointing your iPhone app or you know, Samsung app at Galaxy app, whatever it is. I'm sorry, Android app at your scene. But you are not pointing it at the brightest part of the image, the scene in front of you. You know, you're pointing it closer to where it is a little bit more in shadow. And ideally, you want to get a reading of both to really see, are you actually seeing a stop difference or half a stop or more? You know, point your reflector, point your metering device, whether it's, you know, a Siconic or, again, your app. Point it at several areas in the scene. Try to see what you might think is the average area of the scene, maybe the brightest area of the scene, I mean, the area in shadows. And you'll see obvious differences if there is a range there in terms of the stops of light. You know, you'll see it go like, whoa, I'm going to suggest you shoot this at 1/500th when you're at the brightest part. I'm going to suggest you shoot this at 1/250th when you're at the what you think is the average part of the scene. But then you point it toward the shadows and it may say something closer to 1/125th. So that could be an example where it's really a pretty interesting range. So the darkroom Dave stuff, the over under with his methodology, that's not what inspired me to do this episode today. Although, you know, on its own, I'd still recommend, I'm going to leave a link to get to Darkroom Dave's stuff and see his method for the over-under. No, what inspired me today was something that literally almost made me pull my car over to the side of the road because I started playing with my podcast app on my phone while I was driving because I wanted to replay what this gentleman had just said. So let me set the scene. If you're not a subscriber to B&H Photography Podcast, I highly recommend you add that to your subscribe list of podcasts. These guys are great. It is such a terrific podcast. You know, it's absolutely amazing. They do such really consistently great work on this podcast. All right, so that's my plug for B&H Photography Podcast. Recent episode is called Rodney Smith's Leap of Faith, an intimate chat with his surviving widow, you know, Leslie Smolin, and his all-time darkroom pal and assistant, Terrence Falk. So really interesting way to set up an interview and a podcast special about someone's work. So Rodney Smith has since passed away. He died in 2016. He was a longtime, very, very successful black and white photographer, specializing a lot in very, very arty portrait photography, specific stuff he did with corporate people. You know, they would hire him to do these corporate portraits, and especially this kind of like off the wall, surrealist, or almost Harold Lloyd-esque weirdness, with combined with fashion. So he's described in their blurb as somebody who used a lot of lighthearted humor. You know, these often 6x6 frames of Tri-X film, perfectly developed, amazingly printed, and so on. So yeah, if you want to get into Rodney Smith, just listen to this podcast. Of course, it'll be linked. But what really got me especially interested was they got deeper and deeper at one point into, well, he knew his technique and he stuck with his technique all throughout his life. This person, Terrence Falk, or Terry, the person who was describing working with Rodney, both on the scene as an assistant, but especially he was his darkroom dude. He was the guy, he's considered now a master printer. He was with him for all the stuff he did for all his prints. And Mr. Falk was basically, you could hear the excitement in his voice where it's like, yeah, you know, we got down, or Rodney Smith had it down to a science where he just stuck to this method, whether it was 1974 or 2016. You know, all throughout that time when he was still shooting film, he's basically stayed true to one film, one developer, and one methodology, essentially. And guess what that methodology was? Well, of course, it was the over-under. It was the over-under. But it was slightly different than Darkroom Days. So here's how it goes. What he starts describing was he would use a spot meter. Right off the bat, that's like, okay, wait, but you're taking portraits, so wouldn't you use the incident meter? So that's the first part that pricked up my ears. I'm like, you're a portrait photographer who's not using an incident meter? No, he's using the reflective meter and spot meter, of course. And what he's doing is he's aligning the subject with, wait for it, the freaking Ansel Adams zone system. He's doing zone system work for portrait photography. I found that mind-blowing. Like, I literally, you know, you hear a lot of stuff over the years when you get into how certain artists work. I've never heard of anybody who works almost entirely with portraits. And pardon one second, I'm just going to, that's my echo asking me to change my film. So right now, I am actually developing a roll of 120 in Rodnell, and I'm doing semi-stand, so I'll be right back. I'm going to flip that a little bit, give it a quick agitation. I'll be right back. Okay, so I'm back. Yeah, doing portraits and combining it with the zone system from Ansel Adams. Yeah, that's pretty retro. So here's how it all works. Very, very, very simple. They would only use Tri-X, as they, meaning Terrence's assistant and master printer, our man, Mr. Rodney Smith, the photographer. They would only use Tri-X, and they would typically rate Tri-X at either 200 or 250, I suppose, depending on the conditions, how cloudy or contrasty the light was. So right off the bat, you know, they're opening up the Tri-X a stop. They are shooting it, rating it, the IE, as it were, at 200 or 250. But then they would use, the meter to get a reflective reading off the subject's face, looking at those skin tones, and they would place those skin tones on the zone system, say zone 6, but often, quite often, it's zone 7. Really crank up the zone system to a 7, I guess, with subjects who were obviously a little bit lighter skinned, you know, and then subjects who were of course darker skinned, they would intentionally make sure that they were back down to a 5 or even a 4. So they would, it was all about using the zone system 4 or 5, but especially sometimes 6 and 7, and that's how they would readjust the exposure. So typically, say if they were using a subject with a lighter skin, they would be shooting with rating it at 250 or 200 and bumping that zone up to 7. So yeah, overexposing it, you know, and under developing it. And they basically said it boils down to, like, we would, if he was using D76, which that's what they always used, he said it wasn't really about time and temperature conversion. It was more just about, no, we just had a method where, and he didn't spell it out in percentages, but I did the math. Essentially, they were taking 30 to 35% off the time. So his example was, yeah, instead of developing Kodak at 20°C for 10 minutes, they would be developing it for 6.5 minutes. So severe underdevelopment and obvious overexposure based on the subject, based on their skin tones. So yeah, really intriguing stuff. I kept going back and replaying that, like, wow, that is intriguing, you know? It's just a really intriguing way to work. And they, you know, they went into some more details about the printing methods. But yeah, it kind of like just brought it back home for me, you know? This was how they worked. Like, they didn't change this at all. They didn't experiment with any other films. They didn't, briefly, I think he got into color, but mostly he was a master black and white artist and working with a master black and white printer. His stuff is impeccable. I would love to see these prints in person. Of course, that was something that I don't think his stuff has been reproduced in any fantastic way in a book or anything yet. But I think he does have an exhibit coming out. Or no, I'm sorry. The podcast was about actually a book that's going to be coming out soon. His first major retrospective. So yeah, I'm not giving a huge shout out to this guy, Rodney Smith, because I'm so in love with his work. I kind of have mixed feelings about the body of his work that I saw. He's obviously technically brilliant. I think just some of that lighthearted humor with the nod to the unbearable lightness of Being movie, where everybody's got the bowler hat, Milan Kundera / Harold Lloyd / Magritte bowler hat thing. I don't think that's aged that great, to be totally honest. But it's obvious, yeah, in the 80s and 90s, all throughout the 80s and 90s, and maybe even into the early noughts, he was pushing for this somewhat timeless and eerie nod to the days of the surrealists with his photography, and not using any kind of Photoshop tricks, but often just capturing the subject jumping up in the air in these unlikely places. Again, did I mention the bowler hat? but yeah, it's incredible lighting, just amazing composition. Compositionally, this guy was freaking brilliant. Anyhow, yeah, the whole over under. So yeah, it kind of really inspired me. And that's going to segue into my last part here, which is on my quest to use up most of my film and utilize the cameras I've been, I don't know if neglecting is the right word, but essentially just I have a very, very simple spreadsheet, and I just have started since, I guess, last month to just include, you know, what I've recently worked with, you know, what I've recently worked with. So yeah, like if I go to my documents here, and why can't I find this right now? So give me one second. Let me open up my spreadsheets. There it is. I have two documents, basically one of my film on hand, once left. But yeah, this one, my cameras, I have it just simply date last used. And I can just, you know, flip a switch and sort it by ascending or descending. And I can see that, yeah, you know, like things like the Nikon F100, I've used that recently. Two digital cameras, I've used that recently. The rangefinders and the Mamiya RZ67, they've been getting steady rotation, including, yeah, those are probably the biggest rotations, like just going through the two rangefinders from Leica, the mirrorless camera from Sony, using the D7200 and the F100 for the sports stuff, which I think I'll talk about the next episode, the surfing stuff. But that still leaves these other cameras that I haven't used, especially the one I'm using right now. Like the camera I'm using, you saw it with yesterday and today, it hadn't been used since April, you know, on the last film shoot that I did. Basically that's been interesting to kind of like force myself to go to these cameras that maybe are not my go-tos and force myself to run through some of these rolls of film, especially the 120. Like I've got a backlog of HP5, which I'm going to be going into. So yeah, today I'm developing, I think the second to last roll of FP4. I've got my 645 loaded up with a fresh roll of FP4. And then I've got about, almost 10 rolls of HP5 left over. So part of me's thinking that I'd like to try this method, this zone system method, the over under, with my 120 HP5, you know, just see if there's some similarity. So I think I'm going to rate my HP5 closer to 200 or 250. I'm going to do a reflective or semi spot metering on my subject. And if their skin tone is on the lighter side, yeah, I'm going to bump that exposure up at least one or two stops. And I think I neglected to mention, but that's really what you're looking at. So if you're looking to place my subject at zone 6, well, then you need to overexpose by a stop. If you're looking to place your subject at zone 7, well, now you're looking to overexpose two stops. So just to refresh, when you do get a reading from your source, whether it's your app on the phone or your Siconic, it's that neutral gray stuff, that 18% neutral gray. So that's zone 5. Whenever you get a reading, it's telling you zone 5. And the Ansel Adams thing, to simplify it, is to just say, well, where do I want to move that guy? I'm getting a reading here. It's telling me, of course, I'm at zone 5. Do I want to place that the opposite way? Do I want to make that now a zone 4 or zone 3? Or do I want to overexpose one or two stops and move it up to zone 6 or zone 7. And then you got to factor in two, whether or not you're using a filter, of course, or factor in this case, not using a filter, how did you rate the film? So essentially, you could be overexposing by three stops, hence the 30% less time in the development. So you're N is your normal time. Like in this case, it would be 10 minutes for HP5 or 10 minutes for Kodak Tri-X. And then you're taking it down. You're under developing that time to compensate. So yeah, nothing really super scientific. But yeah, just interesting stuff. And I really want to keep trying. So that's what I'm going to do. That's my mission. And I've found shockingly that I'm really starting to like walking around with my 645 setup right now. When I brought it to work the other day, I was really shocked how kind of liked it so much more than the last time I used it. When I switched over to the 645 version I have now, which means I've got a much heavier lens on it. I have the 6.7 lens on my relatively light 645. And it's not a normal lens. It's not a wide lens. It's semi-portrait length. You know, even though it is a 105 field of view on its native Pentax 6.7, 6x7, converted to the 6.45, it's not quite 105, but it's still longish, you know. And I think it's just weird walking around. I don't have that same point of view anymore where I like walking around with even an 85. I just don't associate walking around with an 80 or an 85 or even a 70, be honest. It just seems like I like walking around with a 45 or a 50 or even a 55. Just, you know, being able to have a normal lens and step forward, step back. But regardless of the field of view, I'm just sort of like, there's something so wonderful about shooting 120 with a built-in meter, you know, and a built-in film advance that is reliable. The film advance has not ever screwed me up. It loads that film, it finishes the film, rewinds the film. And the reason I mention that is I've had some bad luck with other cameras that do that. Talking about U-Contact, so maybe that might be another thing to mention on another episode. But yeah, I've had incredibly bad luck with my Contact's bodies. Love the Contact's lens for it. You know, I have this beat up old 51.7 planar, which I can't give up. But the Contact's bodies, especially the ones that auto advance and auto rewind, they've done some terrible things. Where you know you think the film's advancing, and then you go to finish the roll up, and it's like no, it stopped advancing after your third shot. So you've just wasted. You know, like you basically don't have a roll of film. So sorry to end on that negative note, but yeah, that is one area where like you know you gotta love the more manual cameras and manual advance. Anyhow, that's the end of this episode. I'm going to wrap this up at 30 minutes. Hope you enjoyed the over-under. I know nothing too mind-bending about this subject, but it's of interest to me lately. You know, it's kind of sparked my brain a little bit. And I'd like to, you know, just control the exposure with a more deliberate way for portrait taking. I'm going to try this method out and see if I can get some good results. So, yep, talk to you guys next time.